friends, and welcome to another edition of the OIJ-PCR Dialogues. As you all know, the OIJ-PCR Dialogues are focused on peace and conflict resolution with the aim of positively contributing towards creation of a peaceful society. Women represent almost half of the humanity and are also integral part of the society. Yet, they are struggling to making their voices heard. Yes, I'm referring to the state of affairs in Afghanistan. This episode will throw some light on the women issues and their rights vis-a-vis Taliban 2.0. Today, we have an eminent journalist, Ashali Verma, author and a media consultant who was awarded the Global Award for Media Excellence for Best Population and Environment Reporting Effort in 1997 by the Population Institute, Washington. Currently, she writes a column in the Times of India under No Free Lunch. Welcome to the OIJ-PCR Dialogues, and we look forward to a very engaging session with you.
Thank you, Jyoti. I'm really pleased to be on your podcast, and I hope I contribute something valuable for your audience. So let's begin. Actually, I was just reading today itself that there are about 250 female judges, women judges in Afghanistan. Only a few have managed to get away, maybe 12. The rest of them are in hiding. So I'm really worried about what's going to happen to women in Afghanistan, girls' education, and the fact that they want to rule by a form of Islamic law, which is very ambiguous and one doesn't know exactly how it's going to play out.
Absolutely right, ma'am. If I may take you down to the memory lane of 1996, September 30th, when Taliban decreed that women should be banned from not only employment opportunities, but wearing a burqa and so on and so forth. You know, in some parts of Afghanistan, including Kabul, a generation of girls today has grown up in a world which has been completely different from the one their parents knew. And I'm referring to the earlier phase. So the hard-won rights for the women, you know, I think perhaps will come crashing down now. So, you know, I want to throw some light on that, ma'am.
Well, you know what happened, as you know, in 1996?
Yes.
The Taliban regime was pretty brutal for women and girls. In fact, that time girls were not allowed to study, and a lot of them had to, even in Kabul, the burqa, the complete burqa was in form. Today they say they've changed, and you know, a lot of people, according to even some Pakistani journalists, they say that, oh, the Taliban has, you know, learned a lesson and they won't be so strict. And in several interviews also, their more main spokesperson has said that, oh, we will allow women to work according to our Islamic law.
Right.
But they can be teachers, they can be nurses, they can go to school, but they cannot hold high government positions. Now, I was quite amazed that in the last 20 years, several women have been parliamentarians, they've been women activists for girls, they've opened schools, parlors. All that is going to be banned.
Correct.
And even in television, like they have Tolo News, Ariana News, they had many women, you know, reporters and anchors. And I don't think they'll be allowed anymore, but I just hope I'm wrong.
Absolutely right, ma'am. In fact, I'd like to quote a statement from the first female envoy to Washington in 2018. Afghanistani female, envoy to Washington. Her name was Roya Rahmani. And
yes,
for the sake of repetition, Roya Rahmani became the first Afghanistan female envoy to Washington in 2018. And she says, and this was quoted in the newspaper of the Washington Post, and she says that she is worried that women will be pushed back at least a century. So how much of her statement is echoed in your understanding?
Well, I think she's pretty right, because, you know, her parents, when she was growing up, there must have been Taliban rule. And so she knows what is happening. And I think when the very fact that the Americans did not insist on them having elections, they did not, it was all one way, as far as I could see. It was the Taliban's way that came out. They allowed, even before any commitments made by the Taliban, they allowed 5,000 prisoners of, Taliban and ISIS prisoners to be released.
Absolutely.
The Afghan government had to release them.
Yes.
And the fact is that, right now I have a feeling that they might in Kabul allow some kind of, for sure, allow some kind of schools and other things to operate. But in the other provinces, one will not have eyes and ears to see really what is happening.
Absolutely. So will it be a kind
so
of...
this is our worry.
Sorry, ma'am. Will it be a kind of a facade or just a sham just to showcase the international world that we are actually, genuinely, making the women get back to their earlier employment?
Well, earlier employment will not be possible because they will, they're really itemizing the things that women can do. So far, what I've heard is teachers and nurses. But, women were in every part of life in Afghanistan recently. I mean, they opened parlors, they were singing, dancing, there were, competitions. And there was a lot of progress amongst women. They were activists, they were social workers. They had actually taken up a lot of, all of a sudden you could see that the Afghan women were blossoming. And I don't think that they'll be allowed to do even half of what they were in, 1 year ago. And that is what is worrying me, because if you're part, some of them had even joined the police force. They were in almost every aspect of life. And for that to be completely, but on the other hand, I think the Taliban, they've never really governed. They've ruled by diktat and by Islamic law. They've not governed the whole country. So they need money, they need acceptance. And perhaps for that, they might, allow certain things to happen and the world could accept it. I'm not sure. But I think they have to be held to some accountability, because otherwise the women will suffer. And a lot of women are very, very worried.
So where do you see this? How do you see this panning out? Because, I think on the 2nd of September, we saw in a rare public display where dozens of women in Afghanistan, especially in the Herat province, they protested against Taliban rule and gender-based violence. And they marched towards the office of the governor of Herat, which is the largest city by population in West Afghanistan. So are you foreseeing such kind of demonstrations or such kind of movements by the collective women groups in Afghanistan?
Definitely. I think that the Taliban will not, they might try, I hope they don't try and are not violent with these women, because it's very possible that, right till now, there was foreign media there and these women could come out and they could march. And the Taliban would have been scared to sort of you know, shoot them or in any way try and break up the protest. But once the foreign media is gone, then what keeps them from, you know, violently subjugating these women, putting them in jail, you know, doing anything they want to?
Correct. So,
so that's the problem.
Right, right. So that means in the following months, we are going to see more of women activism out on the roads of Afghanistan. Do you foresee that?
You know, it's not only women. I think there are a lot of young men who've also grown up with music, with freedoms.
Right.
So I don't think, and I don't know whether you know these statistics, but Afghanistan is one of the youngest countries in the world. The average age is 20. That means that in the last 20 years, a lot of people out of, I think, 33 or 35 million are under the age of 20.
True.
And they've only seen democracy. It may have been flawed. It may have had its problems, but at least they were free to do what they wanted. I don't think it's only going to be women. I think it's going to be a lot of young people, you know, generally teenagers, activists, young men, women, girls, who are all going to, in many ways, react against any kind of subjugation or any kind of deal where they have to go back to the late 1990s.
All right. So, ma'am, you know, like we heard about, we've been reading newspapers and, you know, the social media is abuzz with the news on Afghanistan. And the Taliban claims that, you know, that it has become more inclusive. It will include, it'll let women also, get back to some kind of employment, of course, under the Sharia law. Now, how is the two... I want to understand that how is it that under the provisions of employing women in a particular job profile, for example, as administrative workers or as diplomats or, you know, as teachers, where does the Sharia law fit in vis-a-vis the women's right to seek employment?
The Sharia law came much, much later after the Quran was written. So and there are hadiths with the Quran. So unfortunately, there are people who can sort of look into it and translate it into whatever they want it to mean, not particularly what Sharia is. And I mean, there is some form of Sharia law being practiced in like 17 or 18 countries which are Islamic.
Right.
But even in those countries, women are allowed to go to work in school. And so, and even as you know, that Saudi Arabia is also opening up.
Right.
And they are also allowing their women to drive, and they're trying to go forward in many ways. So I don't know whether Afghanistan they'll really have a problem on their hands if the Taliban don't allow women to work, because in every other country, even in Iran, which does follow Sharia law, women do have to cover their heads, but they can go to they're very highly trained. They're doctors, they're professionals, and they take part in almost all aspects of life, except in the, I don't think there are many of them in parliament.
Right.
But apart from that, I know for instance that they even run businesses. So it can be applied according to what the Taliban make of it.
So
and unfortunately,
sorry, ma'am, please.
Unfortunately, they are going to have a religious head. So that means the religious head will decide what will happen as far as Sharia is concerned, to what extent it'll affect women, to what extent it'll affect marriage, divorce, and just about everything according to what one man says. And yeah, that's going to be the judicial way, the same as in Iran, I think. But Iran, to start with, was very free. Iran had not seen 40 years of war like Afghanistan has seen.
Yeah, 20 years.
And in part, yeah, and in parts of Afghanistan, women are really treated very badly even today in the rural areas. So there's a great divide between the urban and the rural areas. There's a great divide. But I've heard just recently statistic to say that 50% of the people in Afghanistan live in urban areas.
Right.
So for those people, at least, I think, you know, there has to be some progress. They can't go backwards. And I think the Taliban will find it difficult to make them go backwards, to force them to go backwards.
Right. So what you are saying is that the women folk who live in the rural areas, it doesn't really matter for them whether Taliban comes to power or it's ruled by the previous government, previous dispensation. For the rural women of Afghanistan, they remain in the same, I don't want to use the word drudgery, but then they would remain in the same societal, with the same societal norms, customs and traditions which they have been following, with the burqa, you know, accepting the Sharia law. So nothing changes for the rural women of Afghanistan, that means.
No, it depends from which area you come from, because Afghanistan has many different types, tribes.
Right.
And the Uzbeks and the Tajiks are much more liberal than, I would say, the Pathans and the people who come from the tribal belt of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. So from those areas, they rule by decree, and they still have I think imams, the local loyal, they are called these jirgas that decide on the punishment for women and all. And one has heard of women being stoned to death and all sorts of horrifying things. One has heard that even in the past, but it wasn't that prevalent, came out in the news. The problem would be if the Taliban shut down all news channels.
Right.
And shut down, didn't allow internet and telephone. Apparently, everybody in almost 90% of Afghanistan has mobile phones. All of them may not be smartphones, but they do have it.
Right.
And another thing that worries me is the fact that the Taliban say that music is haram.
Right.
And the younger generation, especially the ones who are in there, you know, from early teens to 30, 35, they've been used to seeing Bollywood films and music and videos and television. So how are they going to be able to ban it, you know? I mean, can you ban something on your smartphone? I mean, do you have the internet capacity to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, they can't build a firewall like China has built.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you can either have internet or you don't, or you close it. So I have a feeling that if they do shut off all forms of news and social media, then there will be a backlash, not only from the community, but also from the international community. And they are pretty dependent on it.
True. Absolutely. So, but, you know, we are hearing about the possible government formation by the Taliban, and they say it's going to be inclusive governance, but they have also made it clear that women perhaps might not be part of the governance structure. So
no, they won't.
Yeah, So
there will be no women in judiciary like there is now.
Right.
And there will be no women in higher positions. They may have, I don't know how it will work exactly, but they may have some women representatives from various places, you know, at a lower level. But I just doubt that they will allow them to, you know, their voices will come out like they did before. They won't really be able to speak their mind, that's for sure.
So they are, in a way, they are prisoners in their own homes.
Yes.
All right.
But that was what Taliban was like before, you know. They didn't allow women to even go out without a male member of the family. And, you know, when a lot of young men have died in the, who are married, have died in the forces. Now, how does a widow earn money?
Right.
So, right. You know, she has to go out and work. Correct. And if she's not allowed to go out without a male chaperone, and if there is no male chaperone, then what does she do?
Absolutely. But do you think that that the Taliban, the incumbent government, and they might be, you know, catering to these kind of problems that the women are facing, or do you feel that they'll just shove it off, and for them this might not be perhaps even a point to consider?
You know, I think they will have to consider these points for the simple reason that it's unfathomable that they can go back to, you know, 1996.
Right.
To me, that seems almost impossible in 2021.
True.
So I have a feeling that there are going to be a lot of pushes and, you know, a lot of a groundswell of young people who will not take this. And how many of them can they put into jail or shoot?
Right.
So that is the only thing that they have, you know, that they don't. I don't think the Taliban even realize this, because, you know, till now they were mainly in rural areas.
Correct.
Where women are more docile and they, you know, they stay at home. But when you're actually governing cities and you have this young population who's educated and who's gone to school and who, they have their own businesses and they are working in various departments of the government. They need them also. Just think of it. I mean, if somebody is a doctor or a lady doctor or a teacher or somebody who's even an economist, I mean, can they completely tell them to go home? I don't think so.
Correct. Absolutely. I'm with you on that.
You know, the thing is that the Taliban are not one like single-minded group.
Yeah.
There's the Haqqani group, there's the Taliban, then there are the young Talibs have known nothing more. I mean, you know that the politicians, not the politicians, but the Taliban who have gone to Dubai and Doha and Russia and all this, who have been entertained by world powers,
right.
They've got offices in Doha, and they've seen, you know, how women are treated all over the world. So they might want some changes, but will the younger lot who have the guns in their hands accept it?
Mm-hmm. That perhaps only time will tell.
Yeah, so I have a feeling that one will just have to wait and watch. But one thing is for sure, that I doubt if they can go back to 1999. They will have to give some freedoms to women, and they will have to give some freedoms to girls and to families. But it really depends. It will be a push and pull, I think. You know, they may come down very harshly, and then they may find a groundswell of agitations, protests, and I don't think they'll be able to handle it like they did in 1996.
All right. So can the international organizations play a role in the same?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you have various UN organizations, but You know, I've seen UN organizations work in China as well, and under a draconian system, it's very difficult. You have to get permission when you go as a reporter or a journalist. You have to get permission right from the Chinese government even to go and to the offices of, say, UNFPA or UNICEF. So it really depends on, they always have minders, you have to take permission. Now, whether the Taliban are going to do it in that way, I don't know. But women's organizations should be allowed. Whether they will be allowed, whether NGOs will be allowed, they need them. They need them. They need that expertise. Unlike, you know, China or all these other very, very draconian countries, the Taliban really need help to rule and to govern. And they need the expertise of young graduates, and there are many of them. So can they, just because you're of the wrong gender, can you just take them out of the workforce? I don't think so.
Okay. Especially during the 1990s rule, women had very little, no freedom, you know, especially in terms of civil liberties. But ever since the Taliban regime was removed in 2001, women's rights have gradually improved under the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. So women are once,
yes,
again, they were the de jure equal to men under the 2004 constitution as well, which was largely
based
on the 1964 constitution. Now, however,
yes,
their rights are still complicated, you know, and more so they will be complicated after Taliban 2.1 forms the government. So the future of women in Taliban, I don't foresee it to be very bright, nor will it be very bleak. So somewhere down the line, a middle kind of a path perhaps might need to be followed by the new Taliban regime.
You know, I do hope that they keep parts of the constitution that was made in 2004. I mean, there has been some discussion on it, which I heard, but it was discussion between analysts. It didn't really have the Taliban involved.
Right.
So the fact that they're going to have a religious head like they do in Iran,
right,
shows that their constitution will be different.
Okay.
Because even in the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, there wasn't the head wasn't a imam.
Right.
One is actually in a gray area here, because till now we don't really know what they're thinking. I mean, what they say, as everybody says, that, you know, you'll have to wait. They can say anything, but you'll have to wait for the action.
Right. In fact, a lot of media reports, like The Guardian also reported, and this was on the 1st of September, you know, the op-ed piece said that, you know, in Afghanistan, there are fewer than 100 out of 700 female journalists who are still working. So look at the downfall from 700 to less than 100. And they're saying that female journalists in Afghanistan, in fact, are being forced out of their jobs and told to stay at home, despite Taliban promises to allow them to keep working and to respect press freedom, you know, according to the report. And the RSF, which is the Repertoires Sans Frontières, it says that it believes that, you know, the number is just diminishing. Fewer than 100 out of 700 female journalists. And perhaps in a week's or 2 weeks' time, the numbers is going to again dwindle down further. So we see a mismatch between what the Taliban is saying and what is actually happening on the ground.
No, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. But also remember that a lot of these journalists and a lot of the people who were really powerful and had a voice, they've gone underground.
Right.
Because they really don't know how they're going to be treated if they come out.
Right.
So it's a fear factor involved as well. And that's something that the Taliban will have to act on immediately. You know, if they say, if immediately they say, look, women, you can come back to the TV studios, or you can write for the newspapers, and we won't do anything to you, we'll give you amnesty, then it's fine. But so far, their actions have been quite different from their words, because they said that they will not punish or, you know, in any way go after the people who work for the former government. But they have been doing that.
Great.
There have been lots of information that's come out in the media that they've been going house to house to find out where the person who was helping with the Americans or the armed forces or even, you know, in television and news,
right.
They are looking for them. And a lot of these women have gone underground. They're hiding. They're moving from house to house.
There was a report which said that the America's Committee to Protect Journalists, they called on Taliban to stop harassing and attacking the journalists. Do you think that the Taliban will, lend credence to this committee of Americans whom they, the Americans whom they so-called despise and they feel that they have had an unjust war over them for the last 20 years?
You know, the life of a journalist in a lot of these countries is not easy.
Right.
You might even see Al Jazeera. I mean, they cannot say anything against the rulers.
True.
And in Pakistan also, a lot of journalists have been hounded out.
True.
And they've had to actually escape abroad for their lives.
Right.
So Gul Bukhari is one of them.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is that this kind of the Taliban will be scared of people reporting the truth.
But there was this female TV anchor who interviewed the Taliban, just when they took over, and then she fled away. She went away. Behesta Arganhan, if I'm pronouncing
yes.
her correctly. And now she's in Qatar, and she said that militants started targeting her soon after their takeover. So there are these genuine women who are fearing for their life and freedom. And,
they're
moving to places like Qatar. So these are the women who did find a way to move out. What about those who can't?
I don't think any, freedom, amnesty or human rights watch or any of these will work in Afghanistan.
Right.
I don't think they'll have any you can warn people, but unless you sanction or do, it's a kind of a quid pro quo thing.
Right.
I mean, the international community will have to come together and say, look, we're not going to deal with you unless you do this, this, this.
True.
So that's the whole thing. NGOs itself, they don't have that much power. All they can do is to highlight it in news forums. But why would the Taliban care what's being said about them in The Guardian or on BBC or in Times of India? Why would they care? I mean, they would only care if it's a carrot and stick approach. If they need the money, they need the, they need to show that now that they've got the country, they can rule. And they'll be like benevolent dictators, but that just remains to be seen.